Jeff Rabin joins us right now. He's our attorney that joins us on Let's Get Legal to talk about SSI and SSDI. He comes on Your Money Matters usually to answer the questions we couldn't get to on the Saturday segment. Jeff, good to talk to you again, my friend. How are you doing?
I am doing great, and the snow isn't that bad yet, so no complaints.
I love that. We were chatting on Saturday. It wasn't so good out there, but it was a great conversation we had where I just want to start, as always, and people probably are sick of hearing me ask you, in 30 seconds, just explain, reset for everyone, SSDI, SSI. These are the two areas you help people with, and what are they?
Social Security Disability Insurance, or Title II of the Act, for people whose medical problems make it impossible for them to work, and they've in the past worked and paid into the FICA system for enough quarters to buy coverage. SSI, Supplemental Security Income, for people whose medical problems make it impossible for them to work, they don't have enough quarters of coverage for SSDI, and they are indigent. That is, they have assets totaling less than $2,000, not including a home and a car, and no money coming in.
Okay. Can someone be, this from the 708, on SSDI and SSI?
The answer is yes, if their SSDI benefit is so low because their earnings were so low that it is below the SSI amount, in which case they can get some SSI to bring them up to that $967 level.
But not a lot of people, I imagine, are on both.
Not a lot. You'd have to have had pretty meager earnings, but it does happen.
630. This is on from Saturday, and again, you get your newer questions in right now, 312-981-7200. 630 says they have a spinal cord injury, and they wanted you to explain the difference between SSI and SSDI and who qualifies for one or the other. An injury and the symptoms from there on, that would be SSDI, unless they're, again, have less than $2,000 of assets, right? Any injury or illness, we're usually talking in the realm of SSDI, correct?
No. We're getting things confused. So let's go back. Both programs have the same medical test. The medical tests for both SSDI and SSI are identical. We have to prove ongoing symptoms so severe that for a period that's lasted or expected at least 12 months, they're unable to perform any type of substantial gainful activity considering their age, education, and work history. So the medical test is the same. The difference is in what happened before the disability. So for many people, they've been able to work their whole career, they paid their FICA taxes, and as a result, they've bought coverage under the Social Security Act. That is, they bought retirement, they bought survivors, they bought disability, and they bought Medicare coverage. Some people have never worked for any number of reasons. It could be medical problems. It could be they were married and so were supported by a spouse and they raised children. They just didn't pay into the FICA system. They can still get some benefits if they're also indigent, and that is having less than $2,000 in assets and no money coming in and can still meet the same medical test of total disability.
Okay. Thank you for explaining that again. You and I have talked many times. I've absorbed a lot of it, but I forgot that, yes, SSI is still part of that same test and equation in a way. Okay. I want to take this break here because I have a pretty big question I'm going to ask you from one of the listeners, and I want to break this down in a couple ways, and I know other people are thinking this. This was from the 847 on Saturday. I don't remember the example we were talking about, but this person says, hey, these people can learn and adapt to change like most of us did and not rely on government support, i.e. the taxpayers. I want to break that down, Jeff, because I think that's important to help change the perspective that some people have on SSI and SSDI. Chatting SSDI, SSI, Social Security stuff with Jeff Rabin, who's an attorney who helps people out on their process of applying for this stuff. And we get a text that's roughly the same every time you come on, Jeff, and I like to dispel a couple myths and rumors, and I appreciate the feedback from listeners, and some people are very angry with where their tax dollars go, so I want to break this one down. You ready to go?
Let's go for it.
The first part of the text was, people need to be able to adjust and change their circumstances, and they should still be able to work. First and foremost, Jeff, the government expects you to find another gig, even if it isn't the same gig you have, before they give you SSDI, right?
That is correct. You know, there are some considerations for age and limited education as people get older, but generally, this is a program of last resort.
Yeah. Like, if I lose my voice, they're going to say, well, go do something else, John, that doesn't require your voice. Maybe that's a bad example, but, you know, you kind of get what I'm driving at here. I'm not going to get SSDI unless I prove I can't do any of these jobs.
If you can't communicate, you're going to be totally disabled. But correct. If your voice just develops a rasp or a cough, like I'm trying to avoid with you today, that's not going to get you totally disabled. Another, I get a lot of calls from people with one eye. One eye does not make you totally disabled.
Wow.
In fact, under their guidelines, one arm does not make you totally disabled, depending, again, on your age. So specifically for people under 50. So to the texter's point, they're absolutely correct. Many people should be able to retrain, adapt to whatever their medical limitations are, and go to work. That's what we have the Americans with Disabilities Act for, is to help employees and employers figure out those reasonable accommodations to allow people with disabilities to function in a work setting.
Yeah.
However, there are those people that can't.
Yes. I guess what I'm saying is the burden is on you and the person that you work with to prove that they can't do basically any job, right? The burden, the government's going to ask you to do something else. Okay, that was part one of what the texter had to say. Part two was it shouldn't be paid for by the taxpayers, or this is our taxpayer dollars. And I guess in a roundabout way, it can be. But this is a different fund than the general Social Security fund, which you also pay into, by the way. But SSDI is almost like the insurance you pay, and you should be able to use it if you need to.
It is insurance. And, you know, this was a decision that the government made in 1935 when Franklin Roosevelt enacted the original Social Security Act for seniors. And then it was expanded during the Eisenhower administration in 1956 to include people with disabilities. And the idea is that there are people in this country, our citizens, and surprisingly, how many of them are your next door neighbors or go to church with you, who are suffering from such severe medical problems that they cannot function at work that would sustain them or pay, you know, right now it's substantial gainful activity, $1,620 gross in a month. And they have to prove that they're suffering from medical symptoms that limit them to that extent. And they exist, and they're real. Let's be really clear. I just threw it on Google while we were on the commercial break. Less than 35% of all people that apply get approved.
Right.
Now, a lot of them are denied for technical reasons, too many assets for SSI, not enough quarters for SSDI. But most people that apply do not get the benefits because either they have technical issues or they're just not that medically impaired.
Right.
Some people, for whatever reason, and I hear all the time, that guy's getting SSDI and I saw him out mowing the lawn. Well, that may be true, but then he may go in and be in bed for 3 days afterward. Or he may be bipolar and the only thing he can do is mow a lawn because it's him and the lawnmower and there's nobody within 20 feet of him. There could be lots and lots of other things going on that would make that guy who can mow his lawn unable to work 8 hours a day, 5 days a week in a work setting.
Right. So even if someone passes the stringent government settings that they have for restricting people, this is not a slush fund for someone banging their hammer with a thumb and then saying they can't work the rest of their life. It's not that. And also, if they finally get passed and get approved, they bought into it with with what they paid. It's how the program is designed. I don't know why I get so up about this, Jeff, because I agree that there's waste in government and there needs to be a lot of fixes to it. But I just don't feel, and of course there's going to be fraud in SSDI like everywhere else, but it's very minimal and it's an important program to be. All right, I'm going to go off my soapbox, Jeff, and answer a couple more questions. The 312 wanted to know, well, how many quarters do you have to work to be able to qualify for this?
The general rule is you must have worked 40 quarters in your lifetime and 20 quarters of the 40 preceding the date you became totally disabled. So let's take an example. This is December of 2025. I become disabled today. They'll first check to see if I've worked 40 quarters in my lifetime. I've actually worked 40 years, so I got that beat. Mm. But then they're going to pull my earnings record from 2014 to 2024, the 10 years prior to the time I became totally disabled, and make sure that I've worked at least 20 quarters during that time period where I paid into the FICA system. If I meet those two tests, I've bought coverage under the Social Security Act for disability.
773, do they even count any mental disabilities as for SSDI?
John, as you know, I also work with the National Alliance on Mental Illness, NAMI, as the executive director of the Cook County North Suburban affiliate. I've done many, many, many mental health cases. In fact, it's probably a huge portion of my law practice is working with people with mental illness. Absolutely, they can be awarded, but the rules are stringent, and the earlier people are taught what the rules are that apply to a mental illness case, the more they can work with their therapists and with their psychiatrist or psychologist and create the evidence that we can use to help them get benefits.
847 just texted in. This is apt. They say, I am just about to start this process applying on my own. Should I wait and see if I'm denied and then call Jeff, or should I call Jeff before I apply the first time?
So years and years and years ago, when the system was different, everybody waited to get denied once and then called a representative. I think that's a very, very poor decision now. Because the evidence requirements are so stringent, the earlier somebody learns and is taught what are the specific issues in their case, what are we looking for in the notes of the therapist or in the notes of the rheumatologist or the notes of the neurologist, the more time they have to treat with those specialists and create that evidence. And, you know, like, for example, people with multiple sclerosis, everybody knows they have fatigue, but they don't complain about it at every visit because why? The doctor knows it. Well, if they don't complain about it, the doctor doesn't hear it. If the doctor doesn't chart it, it doesn't exist. So the earlier I talk to that person with multiple sclerosis and explain the importance of talking about fatigue at every visit, the earlier, the more times they go to the doctor, the more it's documented, the more likely it is that a Social Security judge will believe it.
And the earlier, the better. Jeff, we are out of time, unfortunately. 312-431-1000 is how people can reach you. And if you're curious more about this, go to WGNradio.com. We've had numerous conversations about it. And the last one we just had was enlightening about how the whole process works. We went into the weeds, Jeff Rabin, on Saturday, and I appreciate your time tonight and always on WGN. Take care, my friend.
Thank you, John. Take care.